What's up, everybody, and welcome to Dear Black Men. You good? A podcast where black men can share space, connect, collab, find community, and heal. A podcast for us, by us. Please do not forget this is a therapeutic support group and not group therapy. We will cover topics that closely relate to mental health, but be advised this podcast does not replace therapy. So pull up and tune in from wherever you are and enjoy this dope black space. Welcome back to another group session. Great to see y'all again. Hopefully folks loved that last episode with Kim and Tiffany and another Tiffany. So let us start with our check-in. Whoever wants to start, name, pronouns, location, and feeling.
What up, y'all? Khalif Troy, he, him pronouns, in West Philly, the best Philly. And I'm feeling very grateful to be back in space with y'all. Kind of on a high. It's Black Maternal Health Week, so shout out to that. I sat in a summit today, as heavy as it was. I'm also really, really encouraged to keep empowering the process of what it means to improve Black maternal health rates. So I'm a little hype, but happy to be here.
Hey, this is Sean. He, him pronouns. I am in Brooklyn, New York. And right now I am pretty excited to be back with my brothers and having this great conversation this evening.
Like I said, the next, my name is Ryan. My pronouns are he, him, his. I live in Pittsburgh. And I guess how am I feeling? As always, which should always be a common thing until I find another job, extremely exhausted. That is pretty much how I feel every day of the week, save for the weekends where I'm probably asleep or watching television to relax. So exhausted is my feeling.
I'll go next. Joshua, coming in from Philadelphia, West Side as well. Pronouns he, him, his, and I am feeling confident. I'm feeling busy, and I'm also feeling creative, per usual for me. Just excited for community and everybody.
I'll go next. Daryl, he, him pronouns. I'm in D.C. How am I feeling? I don't know. It's weird. Like, I feel inquisitive, but then for some reason, I also feel anxious. But I don't know why. And I'm just like, this is... I can't explain it, but I feel so anxious.
Well, what's up, everybody? I'm Marvin, using he and they pronouns today, here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Feelings. I had to break out the feelings wheel because I had to really think about this thing. I'm feeling productive, feeling grateful, feeling powerful. A little bit of stress and curious. I'm very excited because next week I leave for Europe. My college roommate is getting married. His fiance is from France. He was like, "Do you want to be a witness?" I said, "Of course." So I'm telling people, I have to go to Paris. Because Kanye said that one time in like an old ass episode or something. And I thought it was hilarious. What was that? Was it it was that prank show? Punked? Was it Punked?
Punked. Yeah, it was definitely Ashton Kutcher. Yep.
Ashton Kutcher at his finest.
Yeah.
And Kanye was like, I have to go to Paris. And I was just like, why is he saying Paris? Like, anyway. But I've been saying I have to go to Paris. So I'm going to Paris for a bit and then London. For a bit as well. So yeah, I'm excited but also nervous because I don't speak no French and so we'll see what Google Translate talking about. Yeah, but just excited to be in community with you all today. So a lot has been going on in the world and the news. So something that has been out there in the news a lot is P. Diddy and the different things going on with him. I was looking at
an article by The Independent, just to see the allegations that have been made against him. So there are multiple civil lawsuits accusing him of sex trafficking, sexual abuse, and also rape. Several individuals, so Cassandra, we know her as Cassie Ventura, recently, said that he forced himself into her LA home and raped her. And that abuse and assault had been happening pretty much throughout their relationship. As we know, she, I believe, settled out of court for an undisclosed amount of money, probably a shit ton. Rodney Lil Rod Jones also, said that there was some coercion happening. Joey Dickerson Neal accused him of drugging and sexually assaulting and recording that assault. And then also there are more individuals that are coming forward as well. Diddy obviously is denying all of this and trying to clear his name. Yeah, what are folks' reactions just about this news? I know folks, it did not seem like people were super surprised, or other celebrities were super surprised that this stuff was happening.
I had a lot of thoughts. I want to add that before this with Diddy, he also, there's speculation that he was directly involved in the murder of Tupac Shakur. And as y'all probably know, I'm a big Tupac fan, and thinking about that, thinking about some conspiracy theories around how his, I guess his baby mom or his ex, Kim Porter, died. I just feel like if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I'm also really intrigued by the fact that little to no one has come to his defense. And I think that silence is the loudest thing ever in this whole thing. A couple of people have, but it's on a periphery. It's if he had friends, they would look out for him. I forget what idiot said this, but the person in the background of that video was maybe his friends know. So, there's a lot to it, but those are my initial thoughts.
This is definitely the open secret everybody knew about, but that's finally officially out there and you can't avoid it. Everyone has either heard of, been adjacent to, or knows of someone who's dealt with him in that context. And obviously has had to keep quiet, has been bought off to not say anything. And now, but as soon as Cassie, came forward, then settled out of court, then the floodgates open. Everybody's come out with something. It's not even the ones, these are just the ones we know about. They're more coming, apparently. And people are expecting folks to come forward and say something. Folks are expecting Don Rashard to say something. It's just so many people who were adjacent to him and had things, may or may not, but things going on, or are probably going to have to come forward. It's not just him. It's across the board. Russell Simmons was served in Bali by Drew Dixon. Even to civil case, it's the fact that she found him, went to Bali, went to a place, found him at a place that he co-founded and owns, and just basically amped it to him and was well, you serve. Something's going on this year where everybody's stuff is coming out. Everybody's being taken down, and with Diddy, it just seems the silence of people who are defending him is just deafening. No one is saying anything. If they are, it's very much I didn't do any, he didn't do anything to me, but I didn't really know about anything going on, but there were some questionable things happening in the periphery, in the periphery of me. Or the big fear, I think the fear is that if people start talking, then I feel the entire music industry is going to come down because everybody has a relationship with Puffy, Mary J. Blige and all those folks. What, you didn't see anything at all? And also what culpability do they have? If the stuff with Diddy comes out, are we going to find out that a lot of our musical faves were also doing dirty shit, which is, it was in, you know, Ozzy was in his heydays, really in the 90s and 2000s. You could say yes. I mean, I actually know someone who's a good friend of mine who was like telling me stories, like things he saw, like when he was working with Pete. Did he like not in that cassette, but just be around in that circle and things that he saw? And he was just like, yeah, Diddy will take down a shit ton of people. And the people you won't expect is also going to be, yeah, your fave. It's like a lot of people are just like waiting. And that's probably why they're silent, because everybody's probably out of lowering, like, you know, probably fighting, like lowering up, make sure things are together and set. So if it does happen, it could be like, well, this is my part in it. Now, the thing about when Diddy was like giving people their masters back, it wasn't because it was honorable, it was because he was trying to sell everything. So he had money to pay for these lawsuits. And a lot of them were, and also a lot of those like people getting their masters back weren't even really good faith. It was basically to shut them up. And he sold them back for nothing. So he sold them back, but he still got the majority of that money. You know, so it's like there's all these layers, and you know, and also, yeah, it's weird there, but what's not weird is not surprising, because people are homophobic, but everybody's focusing on the assumed sex acts that are involved, like him being might being gay, but y'all are ignoring the fact that this man abused, sexually, physically, and emotionally abused tons, maybe hundreds of people he worked. But because of the fact that there's this assumption he might be gay or he slept with men, that's the running joke. That's what y'all are focusing on. And that's fucked up too, but it's just, yeah. Yeah, it's just, I think 2024 is probably going to be a year where like all of our faves are going to go down and there's nothing we can do about it. It's just going to be like, well, this is what it is. So I don't know.
I just wanted to throw in there too that it was speculated that the masters, folks getting their masters back, also legitimately came with an NDA, which is a non-disclosure agreement regarding things, we'll say.
Well, I don't know. Something about it, it just doesn't really surprise me. Because like Diddy's been around since the 90s, and being in the music industry and Hollywood entertainment from the 90s, it just seems like it was a wild time, a wild period, a lot of drugs, a lot of underage girls, a lot of partying. And I think that kind of goes into just the culture of what the industry is. And so, like, I think that's why it's not really, like, shocking or surprising to people, because it's just like, oh, okay, well, like, to people in the industry, this is, like, normal, like, drinking water. But, like, to the public, it's like, oh, my God, like, this is wild. This is crazy. But people just like, yeah, like, that's, I think that's why there's silence there, because, like, this is just the norm. So it's kind of just like being that you're a part of the industry and you see it and you probably partake in it. It's kind of almost like, I feel like people don't really want to call Diddy out, because it's almost like they'll probably be labeled as hypocrites because they've probably done the same, or if not worse.
Yeah, it's very... everything I said, it's very multi-layered, and it's a lot of things that are happening at the same time at once. So for me, when I first heard about it, to what you said, Daryl, I wasn't surprised. It was like, oh, okay, like this could happen, you know, like it's not like, a, oh, wow, you know, what? No, he wouldn't do that. And because to what Khalif said earlier, with the whole Tupac thing, you know, back in the 90s, I strongly believe, you know, like there was just so much, like I said, there's so many layers, and when we think about all the people in the culture that he did create in that environment, or just the people that were even above him that created the culture, regardless, when we think about that, it has me wonder for a moment. To what, I forgot who said it. Oh, Ryan. Ryan said it earlier. It has me wondering or thinking like, wow, all the other people around him who saw and didn't say anything. I'm like, I hear what they're saying about him and now and all those claims. I'm like, now what else happened? Because I'm like, wow, if that happened, then God only knows, you know, what else has gone on that people didn't talk about or can't even speak about on today, because they have, you know, departed this earth. Because to what y'all said, Diddy's been in the game for a minute. He's been in the game since he was in his teen years. Diddy was one of the founders of Uptown Records. Like, that was before Bad Boy. That's Andre Harrell and, you know, the rest of them, like, big wigs and big heads, and especially Black music, good, bad, and indifferent. So, and majority of those people are not alive to speak on a lot of these claims and you know, they, like, to say anything good or bad or random nuances that happen. But yeah, when I heard the news, I definitely was not surprised, was worried for what else deeper happened, like the other odd nuances of people, you know, that did see and couldn't say anything on some type of quiet on set, you know, Dan Schneider vibe where they're like, okay, how can I indirectly help without losing my job? But then still stuff like that. And then the people that who, of course, you know, like worked under it and kind of leaned into the culture, you know, like leaned into that, like manipulative, abusing culture that was probably created over there. And yeah, for me, to what Ryan said, it has me, for me, my fear is one of my artists or, you know, someone in the music industry that I, you know, look up to and look and dear. To hear them come up and say something or to hear their name in something, that was something that I had to sit with and question. Like, that's something that popped in my head when I first heard about the Diddy thing. I was like, wow. I'm like, what if somebody who I like, who is associated with anywhere in their ties of music, whether it's him directly, whether it's the label, whether it's another story, whatever. I'm like, are you, you know, like, what you gonna do? So it's yeah, not shocking.
It gave me Black Jeffrey Epstein. And when stuff like that starts to happen, it makes me think, how is this handled from a cultural standpoint? You know, Jeffrey Epstein, you know, offed himself in prison. So who do we get next? And how do we make that stick? If you look at historically the cases against people in the music industry that have, like, really gone to the public and gone to the press, it's been Black people, right? So then it's like, okay, let's get him. He's going to be the statement. Now, I'm not defending anything that he did because I've read the court documents and I was just mouth on the floor. Like, this happened? Oh my goodness. Whoa. But I think that he's going to be the face to outing the music industry itself. And the years and years and years of things that have been done under the guise of let's make a record, let's make you famous. So it's layer, and unfortunately he's going to be the face of it. But that instantly Jeffrey Epstein, I'm like, yeah, they didn't get Epstein, so they about to get Diddy. And that's crazy because that's usually how it goes. Somebody big and white gets in trouble and they can't stick it to him. Let's get the next person, which is the big Black person. You know, because I'm pretty sure Diddy has records too. So anybody that's big, that's been affiliated with him, has more than likely seen, maybe participated, has been a witness to what's going on and hasn't come forth, you know, so that means that you're complicit, right? And it's just a lot. And I'm like you, Josh. I'm not surprised. When it came out, I was like, oh, here it comes. Here's the avalanche. Here's the snowball. How is that going to change the music industry? How is that going to change the fashion industry? How is that going to change any of the cultural things that he's been a part of and these other people as well?
You bring that up, Sean. I'm curious. Can we talk about the raids on his two houses for a second, too? Because when we talk about what we've seen, and I know folks on The Breakfast Club was like, oh, the raids, this is like a show for social media. And I'm like, I think we should think deeper than that. If, like you said, Sean, I'm of the belief that this is some Epstein level shit, I wonder about what was confiscated. I wonder about who's being protected by the confiscation of what happened at these raids that we may never know. Because think about the Epstein list that wasn't actually a list, right? I'm curious about that because they said he had everybody at these parties. And they said that people were culpable. No, again, this is all what we're hearing and we don't know what to be true. So, you know, just hearsay, I guess, but like based on what we're hearing, we can only speak to what we're hearing. I'm curious about that as well. Like, will they get him or ... Because if some big wigs that are white are legitimately attached, which it sounds like it is, I don't know that they're going to get him just because he's associated with so many powerful people.
Yeah, I could definitely just, I agree with that a lot because like we all said, the people he's associated with and the industry he's associated with, us as Black folk, granted, of course, we all know we don't run the music industry, you know, like we patron it, but we don't run it. The people that cut the checks, you know, granted, if they connect the dots, it's going to lead somewhere. It doesn't end with Diddy, of course, but as y'all have said, and of course, just because of the money alone and the social class alone, they're going to make sure that they lock lips and cancel Christmas. And at least in my head, I feel as though they'll try to pin it on him, you know, like pin it all on him or like, you know, give him some type of not a slap on the wrist, but, you know, make a demonstration of sorts.
Yeah, I'm thinking about how this is like the culture, right? Like this is their culture. And so like, just because Diddy, you know, has been, oh my God, what's the word? Accused of all of these things. Does that actually mean all of this is going to stop? Right. Cause again, there are so many other individuals who are a part of this. So many who go to these parties and probably engage in a lot of these really shitty, fucked up things, but that's their thing and that's the culture. And they do it amongst these incredibly wealthy and powerful individuals. And so, Josh, to your point, it seems like Diddy is going to potentially be the sacrificial lamb. But I'm also thinking, like, well, is that going to change anything? Or are they just going to be like, well, Diddy did that and harmed all these people, and now Diddy's gone or in jail or whatever, and now everything's great? Because that's what it kind of feels like. But, you know, we'll see. Something I want to circle back to that Ryan mentioned was that a lot of people are kind of more concerned with the fact that Diddy allegedly had relations with other men than all the other horrific things that he did. What do y'all make of that?
So I think that's kind of to fit the stigma that all these immoral things go on behind the scenes in the music industry, because conspiracy theory, you know, Illuminati, you got to choose what door you're going to go into. And that's how your life is going to be if you want to deal with us. And I think that they're just taking that aspect of it and focusing on it to, you know, pretty much marginalize a group of people. They have nothing to do with what's going on. So it could be a bunch of, I told you so, I knew he was funny, you know, those words, and really taking away from the seriousness of what's actually happening in the industry. So they're going to take the focus point to say, oh, because he does this, this group of people is also the same way. That's how I took, you know, that focus part, because it's like, all right, cool. In order to become big in the music industry, you have to sacrifice yourself. And this is my opinion, for men, straight men, cishet men, that's the ultimate sacrifice, right? Mm. And they're like, okay, well, I wouldn't do that. So that's why I'm not in the in crowd. But I don't, I think that it's too much. Like, instead of focusing on the seriousness of what's happened, people being abused, child sex trafficking, and just the culture of music and those industries anyway, they're just taking one little component because somebody said that happened. It's like a rumor, you know, whether it's true or not, you know, a rumor can snowball, a rumor can avalanche, and it could be, it takes you away from the actual point to, again, marginalize a group of people that have nothing to do with it.
For me, I think it goes to how in the Black culture and hip hop culture is still homophobic. Because it's like, well, he committed these crimes. He's raped people. He sexually assaulted people. He drugged people. And that's okay. But, oh, he's had sex with a man. Like, oh my God. Like, those are, that's what's like making the news and what's newsworthy. So it's kind of just like, do people like care about like women and like sexual assault and rape? Or are we just trying to just sensationalize Black men having sex with other Black men?
It almost seems like homophobia is stronger than all of those other things combined.
Mm.
And that, I just don't understand it. I just don't get it, but yeah.
For me, it definitely hits, especially what resonates is what Sean said when he said it's like a I told you so moment. Because for me, I definitely got a lot of that, you know, heard or witnessed a lot of that with people in conversations where it was, oh, I told you so, based off of one thing that he did or, you know, an instance of some type of, you know, someone assumes that he's, you know, gay, bi, or, you know, whatever. And yeah, once this all came out and everything, and now we're here to what we all said a little bit. It's as if everyone on the, not everyone, but a lot of people looking at the Diddy scenario and also the rap hip hop culture in general cares more about the who than the what. And for me, that's very strong because even when you look at it in the homophobic way, for sure, I feel like when it comes to that, it's like the homophobia is very strong. And then also just the violence, you know, the endearment for violence is also very strong in that culture, you know? So with both of those, I feel as though it when you look at them through both lens, it's like either, okay, wow, he had sex with what? With men? Oh, what? Oh my God. Like, it's like a whole issue. It's a problem. Or in another situation or another scenario, you can have something else in the hip hop or rap industry when, you know, someone dies or something of that manner, you know, it's like, oh, all right. Yeah. What? Who died? Nobody cares, you know, about the people that were affected by the death. You know, like people don't care about the what. They don't care about the details. They just care about the who. All right. That's who it was. God. Cool. Got it. Same thing in this case. They're worried about who were the people he had sex with. Oh, my God. What? They were men. Oh, they were. What? Rather than the what he did, what he's accused of, what transpired. Like it's so, yeah, that the I told you so moments that really resonated with me, Sean. I heard a lot of those and it made me sit back with that and kind of sit and acknowledge that.
So I want to kind of just transition because when I heard about this, not heard, but I'm continuously, we are continuously hearing about the situation with Diddy. And obviously social media is on fire and everyone's in the comments. A lot of times there are a lot of Black men who are, I'm not going to say defending Diddy, but they try and pivot, right? So they're looking at the homophobia. They're saying, oh, well, they got Diddy when there are other people that do the same things. They're only focusing on him because he's a Black man. Calling out, you know, the harm or and all that stuff is divisive or divisive, however you pronounce that. And so it seems that sometimes Black men will either downplay, defend, or simply just ignore when other Black men are causing harm to others. What do y'all think about that? Agree? Disagree?
Well, I agree. I mean, I feel like for me when I see that, because it seems like, I don't know, when people ignore the harm, I feel like that means that you're unwilling to look at the harm that you're causing to people in your life. Like, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about a friend of mine, the Black man who was talking about, we were all talking about dating in a group chat, and like, he was like constantly denying it and just like not want to talk about it. until someone brought up the fact that he caused harm in a relationship he was in. And then he got quiet and got upset, but then like was like, oh, yeah, you're right. I can't really talk about this because I've caused harm to somebody else. So I think it's just no one's willing to, I feel like, not really. No, I think really in a whole, as a whole Black man, we're not really willing to confront harm because that means you have to look at what you've done to somebody else. And no one ever wants to look at their shit because that's complicated. If I call your shit out, then that's fine because I'm calling someone else's stuff out and not looking at mine. And I think that's the issue. It's like, it's easier to like look at someone else and call their stuff out, but then also like look at your own stuff and think about what the things you've done to other people. Like that's hard. That means I have to acknowledge I'm a piece of shit. That means I have to acknowledge I'm not a great person or I'm a shitty human being. So it's easy to look at everyone else. So I think that's just the thing is like, we, you know, we'll call out each other stuff, but not look in the mirror and say, what have I done? You know, and not just with this, but just in general, like what have I done to cause somebody harm or to cause somebody pain? And have I done anything about it? Obviously not, because you're not addressing it. So I think it's just, I feel like it's just like people, you know, don't really want to focus on harm because, you know, again, I mean, looking at what you've done to somebody else and no one, most people don't have the range or capacity to do that or want to, because that's, you know, you don't want to be seen as the bad guy, but you are the bad guy. You may not be the bad guy like Diddy is, but you're the bad guy for someone else. We all are. That's just unfortunately what it is of being men, of being in a patriarchal society where men are basically centered, where we are often allowed to get away with all kinds of like harm and violence to each other, other women, other people who are like trans, who are non-binary, gender non-conforming. Like we do it all the time, every day, and we're not checking ourselves, and we're all doing it. Like even if it's just how you speak to somebody, you get the wrong person. That's harm, you know. And like you've been told, this is how I want to be. You know, this is how I want you to like, you know. This is how I present, this is how I want you to respond to me. And then you intentionally, or let me tell you, you unintentionally, you know, misgender them. And then you intentionally do it. Like, God, do I want to talk about OJ today? No, I don't. But obviously with that, they were talking about that on like, someone close to OJ made a comment, tweeted, and then everybody was misgendering that person all day. And it's like, y'all doing the same things that like we're doing to each other all the time. And it's just going back to faith. It's just, you know, none of us are perfect. None of us are like blameless. We're doing it every day. And it's just until we have that conversation about the harm we're causing each other, we can't, none of us can check each other, anyone on harm. That's, you know, it's just, we can't. It's impossible.
Real quick. Yeah, real quick. I definitely agree with what you said. I just feel as though also on the same side, but also on the other side of the coin, I feel like a lot of people, or I guess mainly men, Black men, a lot of men aren't able to acknowledge or accept the fact that they were the villain in someone else's story or that they were the abuser. And the reason why they can't accept it is not even because, oh, they don't want to accept the bad they did to people. They don't want to accept the bad that was done to them. They don't want to accept what happened to them when they were a victim. Because now, to what you said too, Ryan, with their whole setup and structure of, yeah, big bad wolf. Big bad wolf can't get hurt. Big bad wolf can't cry. Big bad wolf can't say, oh, I was this, I was that, you know, I was touched, I was this, I was that. Big bad wolf can't talk about that. Not saying, you know, in that structure, they can't. So then I feel as though it gets masked, you know, in that, let me be big bad wolf. And then now the big bad wolf is defending other big bad wolves as they all howling at the moon. But that, yeah.
I just want to say real quick that our masculinity is legitimately tied to prowess and power. And we cannot see that we have been the ones who've been chased down and legitimately harmed. So, Josh, I'm really glad you touched on that. No, Diddy, just kidding. Go ahead.
We need to acknowledge it, man. We do. We need to acknowledge it. That does not justify the acts that we have done at all. You know, that doesn't justify or withhold us from being the villains in other people's stories. But it also, you know, at the same time, it does acknowledge that, yeah, we are good people in some stories, but you're not good in all stories. And you're going to have to read all the chapters, buddy. All right. So let's just acknowledge it.
So it sounds like Black men have an issue with holding other Black men accountable. Yeah.
For sure. Wait, but I don't necessarily want to say it's hard because I honestly want to agree with that 100% because Black men do call Black men out. And I think when it does happen, because I felt like the whole situation with Bill Cosby was called out because of a Black man, because of Lil Rel. He called that out. And he brought
decades later, though.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. It's weird because it's just like, I kind of just almost feel like, when does like self-accountability comes into place for the harm that people are doing and they're doing towards like the community? Because it's almost like as a person, we can't be responsible for other people like individually, but I feel like we should work together as a collective, as a whole, to try to better the community. So it's kind of almost like it's like a catch 22 in a way, because it's like, I don't know. It's like if you call somebody out, is that really going to help the situation? Like, is that going to snowball into like you guys getting into a fight? And I don't know. It's like, it's just so much. There's so much like chaos in the world that it's almost like if you call things out and hold people accountable, it's like, when will you ever stop? Because it's like everyone's out here causing harm and wrecking havoc. So it's kind of almost like, damn, like, should we have that, I guess, that responsibility, that moral responsibility to actually have to be on the lines calling people out? Because, like, when would you stop? Like, it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems almost like overwhelming in a way.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. I also think that accountability and holding someone accountable can look a lot of different ways, right? So it doesn't necessarily look like calling somebody out. There could be calling somebody in, right? So like a call out feels like it's public, feels almost like it's kind of shaming a bit. Calling somebody in is like, let me come holler at you for a minute, right? Let me explain to you like what's happening right now and what you're doing, the harm that you're causing, right? But I also think, to your point, we're not really given the tools to call people in that way, to deal with conflict in that way, right? And so if someone's accusing us of something, a lot of times we're going to get defensive about it. We're not going to be like, oh my God, let me hear you out about the wrong thing that I did. You'd be like, what the fuck? What you mean I did that? Right? Like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we have to be really clear about we have to kind of unpack what accountability looks like. I know, go ahead, Daryl. I know Sean.
I was going to say, it kind of does depend, though, on the capacity of the person that you're holding accountable. Because if that person has like empathy, if they have like a sense of like emotional intelligence, if you call them out, they'll be willing to listen to you and try to make amends and apologize if they can understand. But it's almost like if you're communicating with someone who just doesn't have the capacity to really understand what you're saying, it's almost like, are you almost just like wasting your time and your energy? It's like, it's almost like, are you just talking to a wall? So it's like, how do you discern when to like utilize that energy to call people out, hold people accountable? Because I feel like holding everybody accountable, you're going to just be exhausted.
I think the trouble with accountability is, I think it's twofold. One, for some people, accountability comes with a disclaimer. I am holding you, I'm saying this to you because I love you. And it's easier to call somebody out in public because there's no connection, there's no relationship, there's no feelings involved. And I think that's where the problem lies. if we're friends, if we're brothers, if we family, then I should not have to preface me holding you accountable for something. And it should be received not as an attack, not as a criticism, but as a, hey, listen, your shit stinks right now. So let's fix it. I should not have to say, but I love you, because you should know that me holding you accountable means that I love you. That is a form of love, because I don't want you to keep harming yourself. I don't want you to keep harming others. And now it's harming me. Okay. So those, while you were speaking, Marvin, about calling people out in public, that's the easy part, because then it goes viral. So now I got millions of other people to co-sign and to add stuff that I may want to say, but I'm kind of treading on the line. But let everybody else say it. Yeah, let's get our pitchforks and, you know, our axes, and we're going to go to town on this one person. But your brother is sitting right beside you, who is literally bad talking his girlfriend or his wife or his mother, literally sitting beside you, and you're silent. That doesn't make sense to me. I had a situation like that in one of my classes. One of my students, I don't know, he was just active that day. And one of the girls said something to him. And now she was pretty much fed up. So it was some choice words with that. And he full chested called her a bitch. And when I tell y'all, I went to the moon on him. I went before I even thought about it. I'm like, now, wait a second. Oh, no, I had to leave the room. Like, I was so angry at him for doing that. I had to go to the room, and everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy because I'm going off. I was like, don't you ever, 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 ever in your life, in my presence, say that to another woman. I said, what if I walked up to your mom and just said it to her? How would you feel? And he's like, I would be angry. Well, I'm angry right now because you said that to my student with your whole chest. Like, it was like he had been wanting to say it forever. And it triggered me, because it doesn't matter how angry I am, how upset I am, I do not use that word towards a woman ever, ever. So, sorry. In conclusion, I think that accountability is tougher for people when feelings are involved, when there's actually a connection and a relationship, than it is in public. And I think that's one of the major ways to start fixing it, because you would think a relationship is where accountability can be present the most and can be accepted and internalized and say, all right, I got some self-work to do. My people are holding me accountable.
I definitely love what you said, Sean. And that made me reflect on a couple of relationships I have a little bit, and, like, you know, moments when I challenge people or moments when people challenge me. But also, too, what resonated with me was, I don't know if those moments are easy when you call people in public, because what Daryl said really resonated with me when, for example, if I see young Black boys, you know, wilding outside, being young Black boys, go ahead, Black boy joy. But to what you said, when I see a young Black boy call another young Black girl a bitch, or, you know, seeing the way that some of them love each other, see him grab her face and pull it up and kiss her and then let go and then call her a bitch, I'm like, what? And she, like, laughs at her, or kind, you know, my brain cannot compute that. And for me, I really want to, yes, call him out and also call him in at the same time, you know, not be like, yo, you tripping, but, you know, let him know, like, yo, is that cool to you? That's what the cool kids do. Okay. And just challenge it. But, and I want to do that a lot, and I do that when I can, but it is worrisome or bothersome when, to Daryl's point, when you could have those moments when you blatantly see, you know, this is wrong, or you just blatantly see something is hurting the culture, just hurting our people, and you could do something about it, but then you just have that pause moment, and when you're like, wait a minute, do they have, like,
a dad, or like, is their mom going to come out and freak out? You know, like, am I going to tell them they're going to hear me and go around the corner, and then I got to watch my back now because out of nowhere, people, all I hear is, yeah, him. And then next thing you know it, like you said, like it escalates out of control. And it does tie back, though, to what you said, because all of those people have brothers, have sisters, have mothers, fathers, children, to where they could hold themselves accountable as that mob that kind of easily got stirred up, but just in the wrong way. So I definitely love how you like broke it down in that way. And just wanted to acknowledge what Daryl said about that, because that happens to me on the daily when I have to think like, wait a minute, is this going to result in a fight? Like, will this great intentional moment wind up being the impact is going to be violence now? And now I have to like, you know, kind of try to practice what I preach, but also practice self-defense. So it's difficult. It is difficult at times.
Well, I was just going to throw out there too, what is accountability, right? I mean, we're talking about it. Some might say that someone who is accountable is someone who is completely responsible for what they do. And there is no way around that. To be responsible for what you do and what others do can be challenging. It comes with a whole slew of things. But it also comes with reflection. So if we're talking about self-accountability, you may have to take time, I think it was said earlier, to take a look at what people are saying to you and maybe just shut up and do some of that work quietly. When it comes to holding people accountable and responsible in the public eye, we started this conversation by talking about Black men, you know, online and in the comments. And it's so easy to type at somebody who you don't know and don't have a relationship with than it is to look yourself in the mirror every morning and think about the harm you might be causing. So it's real easy to do that online. And I'm like, let's not do that. Let's not do that. Let's just, you know, let's be quiet if we can't do the very thing to ourselves that we are doing to other folks. Not saying that certain folks in the media shouldn't be called out or called in. I mean, I think it all depends. It's a case by case basis, but let's make sure we know minimum what accountability is for ourselves and others.
I'm thinking about accountability. Let's go there, because I think that's important to really talk about what does accountability actually look like. So let's talk about that.
Before I tell y'all what accountability looks like to me in my short essay, I would like to add to what you said, Khalif, about harm. I know we touched on it a bit earlier, and I think that to go with the accountability piece, some people don't understand what harm is to others. So those playful things, like you mentioned, Josh, the hard kiss and the B word afterwards, the laughing, because maybe, hey, that's harmful for me, hasn't been communicated. And it hasn't been communicated as a boundary, perhaps, to saying, listen, I know that you're playing with me, in air quotes, but that's not funny. Especially you got these people looking at me all crazy out in public because you just said a very, you know, degrading sentence or word to me, but are you playing or not? So that's part of accountability as well, because some people understand harm differently. What may be hurtful for me may be a joke for somebody else. And I think that comes with empathy and just reading the room. Because everybody's different, being in education and just being in leadership, you got to learn your people. Because I can talk to some people rough, straight, shoot it straight from the hip, because that's how I am. But I know somebody else might need it a little softer. So I can say the same thing, but I need to soften it up. So I think those things, because people may seem that that's fake or phony, that type of switch up, but will code switch in an instant. So it's just, you know, knowing your people, knowing how to interact with others. I think that's a very important step in accountability as well, because everybody's not the same and everybody doesn't internalize things the same. So again, what's harmful for somebody is not harmful for the other person, but how do you know unless that person, you know, has expressed that to you?
if I could just quickly honor my OG. Thank you, Sean. I'm gonna honor my late OG who exactly said what taught me the lesson of what you just said. And he told me all play bring about disrespect. And, you know, he was a old head from the South. May his soul rest in peace. But, you know, I definitely, not everybody jokes the way you joke. Not all jokes land the same with everybody. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say too, Sean, thank you for that. Empathy is not taught. It's one of those things that we don't get as men. So I really appreciate that. And tact is also something that people don't have. So for good, bad, or indifferent, it's real devoid. So thank you for that perspective. Seriously, that was really, really helpful.
Now, what's your definition for accountability, brother? You were still on your soapbox.
Oh, I'm glad you asked, because I was sitting here thinking that. I'm like, you didn't say anything about accountability. Get your life. For me, accountability and integrity are almost synonymous for me. You know, mean what you say, be intentional about what you're saying, know what your intentions are, and do no harm, verbal, physical, mental, emotional. But if you do, knowing how to apologize and fix it, and doing the same for somebody else that you would hope do the same for you. I try to surround myself with people who I feel like are accountable and operate in integrity, but we're human, so we slip up every now and again. But I also try to surround myself with people that will check me. Like, you know, you said, you know, that was messed up, right? And I probably would be like, well, I didn't see anything by it. But again, it goes back to what might be a joke for me may not be a joke for somebody else. You know, and just standing on it. If you're wrong, stand on it. Hey, I was wrong, but I show me how I could be better. That, in short, it's my very short dissertation on accountability.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick that I think one of the four agreements is to be impeccable with your word. And it goes both ways. It's like, do no harm. All right. But if you cause harm, acknowledge it and change the behavior. Love the four agreements.
I guess really quick. It just made me look it up. The definition of accountability is the fact or condition of being accountable. And then the definition of accountable is required or expected to justify actions or decisions, i.e. responsible. I have a lot to say, but I'll keep it brief. For me, accountability, I love what Sean said, how it's lined up with integrity. Because for me, accountability lines up with like honor. It's like an honor system, you know, because it's like accountability for me shows a person's moral compass. Because we're all not perfect. You know, we've all strayed. We've all been the villain in someone's story. And with that being said, we all haven't been, you know, our moral compass may have been jaded, swayed for a moment, a long period of time, whatever. But I feel like what really separates people, or what really is accountability, in my words, is when you get knocked off the horse, how do you get back up and onto the horse and continue on the path or continue on the journey? That's truly what accountability is, in my opinion. Yeah, it's kind of really much a honor system, or just like your moral code, your moral compass, because you're always looking to, you know, learn and improve and just, yeah, be human.
Wait, to me, accountability is, so it's reflecting on your actions. I feel like it's ownership. It's self-awareness. I feel like if you cause harm or do something wrong, you're apologizing and making amends for that situation or the harm that you caused. So I feel like it's you being responsible for your actions and the things that you do. But I feel like today we live in this culture right now where it's all about standing on business. So it's like, well, I said what I said. I did what I did. I'm standing 10 toes down on it. And I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to make amends. You kind of just got to deal with it. So I kind of feel like we need to really have like a mindset shift where people are being empathetic towards people. And they do have that self-awareness where it's like, okay, well, I'm causing harm. Mm-hmm. I'm causing chaos. I need to course correct and fix this. But I feel like people aren't necessarily doing the work to actually do these things. So that's why this harm is just being committed left and right. And then there's just no accountability.
And I'm going to just jump in and say real quick, men have a hard time with that. A really hard time with that. And this is not a shameless plug, but the prideful one. Marvin's men's groups are really, like, I remember when I was in the cohort, and right off the bat, one of the things he said was, we have to sit here and acknowledge that as men, we have caused harm. And by like the end of that session, he was like, and I'm giving you permission to forgive yourself for it. Yeah. Boom. Like that to me had me, I mean, I was like, my body, my nervous system was just like all out of whack, because it's like in the same conversation, you know, we had to confront all of that. Of course, we did some really great talking in the middle, but to start that way and to end that way is really, really important. So if you are having a hard time out there, Black men, remember that we love you and we see you, we hear you, and we are you. And this brother got a bunch of men's groups. So go on and tap in.
I said all that.
You did. You did. You does good work out here.
Yeah, I'm okay. Look at me. Darryl, were you
saying something? Oh, yeah. What I was going to say is I think a lot of Black men, to be completely honest, like a lot of Black men are like fragile and they're sensitive. And I think a lot of Black men have issues with ego. It's the ego that's there where it's just like, well, I'm not about to apologize. I'm going to sit here and cause harm. I think it comes into like, I've read something. It's like with people who are marginalized and oppressed, even those people within those groups, they want to marginalize and oppress other people within the group. So I think as Black men, being that we are marginalized in society, we go out and try to marginalize and oppress Black women.
Which is a great segue to my next question of, it seems like we have a hard time holding other Black men accountable. But when it comes to Black women, the call outs are all the time. The right, Meg Thee Stallion, Angel Reese recently.
Amanda Seals.
Amanda Seals. And so it seems like we're very comfortable as Black men calling out Black women. Why is that different? What's the difference there?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's probably because of the fact that, like, you know, we keep hearing all the time, Black women are like, what, the mules of the world? Nobody respects Black women, so why are Black men going to do that? Like, it's every time you get online or in general, just in conversations you have with people, it is very, like, people, it's so easy for Black men to point to finger Black women, or even beyond Black women, Black queer folks, like trans folks. Like, it's very easy to, like, blame at those who are more oppressed than you are. And Black women get the brunt of the time, really all the time, because they're Black women, because nobody holds Black women any kind of respect or regard. Like, it's just, you know, Black women never held any kind of respect or regard, but yet Black women are saving this entire world. Always. Like, and it's just, again, it's just like, since you aren't going to hold other Black men accountable, why you're going to go after the next group that's not going to be easily defended or will be defended. So it's always going to be Black women. Then Black women get tired of doing, they call you out, then you're going after, you know, it's always someone. It's, again, it's just like oppressing other people who are doubly oppressed or oppressed in your community. When it's just really, Black men are just, not all, but really a lot of respects all, we're just shitty people. Like, it's just, there's so much of not us taking, like, calling each other out and taking care of our shit that it just gets thrown to everybody else. Like, again, Black women are like, anytime, you know, anything happens, it's always Black women are blamed. Like, again, Meg Thee Stallion, like, that whole case, everybody has something to say. After I was done, her, like, anytime she, you know, anytime Megan's popped up in, like, the media, everybody attacked her, made fun of her, how she looks, her face, her features, how tall she is, she looks like a man. It's just, But you do that, like they do this to every Black woman that is confident, who's sure of herself, who basically centers herself in her life and centers other Black women in her life too. It's just always been like that. Like it's always been like that. I feel like, no, we'll say self-confidence. I think Black women tend to where they're doing it and don't care. Cause again, we're not gonna hold each other accountable to the shit that we say about each other and other groups. We just go after everyone else or groups that are like, we feel like less empowered than we are. And that's not even really honestly empowered. It's not really empowerment. It's just, you know, because of how things are set up, Black men have, in I guess in the community, more power than everyone else. So like people use that power. Never in the best way, but they use that power against and wielded against everyone else that is deemed weaker than them. Which is always kind of hilarious to me because, like, if niggas actually looked in the mirror, they'd realize they're probably just as weak as the people that is that they're attacking. But we don't want to have that conversation because that requires you to actually look at how fragile you are and how you don't want to deal with those fragile parts that make you actually a decent human being to walk the face of the earth.
You were speaking there, and I would say we definitely utilize the power part, the portion, and also too, I would, in my opinion, I feel as though a part of the power they give to us willingly, you feel me? And when I say that, that's in those moments when Black women, time and time again, no matter how many times we have, you know, maybe given them reason to give up, they have still chosen, you know, to still endear our children, endear, you know, our families, endear our responsibilities, endear so much. So that's when I'm like, you know, like they'll still choose to give us that power and will, or, you know, the keys to the car, whatever analogy you want to use. And we take it for granted. That's why I feel as though too, a lot of the time when you put a Black man and a Black woman together in the same space, a lot of the time the Black man, like what we're saying, you know, we just want to be that conqueror or, you know, that authoritarian in the space that we're in. And if you put us in a space around other people that look like us, we're definitely going to, you know, go off and take the floor. And it's sad because when you have that conqueror mentality or that like hero archetype stuck in your head, you think you're defending everyone, but are you really, you know, like, are you really defending everyone? Does everyone really need to listen to you? And, because we take people's respect for granted. I would say we take the Black woman's respect that they give to us or the power that they give to us for granted as Black men. And I'll just end it with this. My analogy for the way we interact with Black women is usually, for example, kind of like a college basketball team. It's like there's, you know, the men's basketball team and then there's the women's basketball team. Both play for the same school. You could say UConn, right? Sure. Both play for UConn. So that means we both probably use at times, you know, similar facilities, all those things of that. But we're both, you know, let's say sitting on the bench while the other team is doing their scrimmage or vice versa. We're too worried about pointing out the flaws in the girls' basketball team and not worrying about the flaws that we got going on as the men's basketball team. But since we're in the same space, i.e. the school, we're both playing for the same school and we're in that same space, we just have this weird notion, you know, to kind of point and it's pointless, you know? That's basically the point of my analogy is to just prove that it's pointless. You both play for the same team. You need to worry about what's happening on your side of the bench. You need to worry about watching your highlights. Where did you mess up? Where are your highlights? So that's my take on it. We take it for granted.
I was going to say, and look at Black men adopting white supremacist practices. I told y'all it was Black Maternal Health Week, and we can't go without saying that Black women have literally taken care of their own families. They've taken care of white families. And Black men were incredibly emasculated during the enslavement process and at times very much separated. So it's almost like we have to overcompensate because that is in our DNA. Everything that was given to us is definitely here now. White supremacy, we take it on. The patriarchy, we take it on. And we literally, because we can't see it, we definitely cause the harm to our Black women. And that's why we don't know how to hold accountability for Black women. We actually do with something that Ryan said earlier, is that we just throw shots. We say a bunch of stuff about how Meg Thee Stallion looks. What does that matter? What does that matter? She's actually been harmed. She's actually a survivor of violence. But I will say, for all of the villainy, I guess that's not a word, but we're going to claim it today, that 50 Cent has, I will say that I do appreciate the fact that he was one person who at least apologized to Meg Thee Stallion publicly for being like, okay, he wasn't really believing it. And then he was like, my bad, actually, I made a mistake and I want to apologize or whatever, whatever. That's huge. And I feel like that doesn't get enough play either because, you know, he has to be the villain, right? But like a broken clock is right twice a day. So I will say that I appreciate that from good old Curtis. But we gotta be mindful about how white supremacy plays a part in how we engage in our community with our women.
Oh wait, I don't want us to like put out this narrative that like black men are horrible. But I don't know, it's like I kind of felt like a harsh truth that I feel like I never really hear people say like out loud and in public. I feel like as black men, like we're underdeveloped. And with us being underdeveloped, I think within that, there's this sense of like entitlement, and people think they have like ownership over women and stuff like that. But with guys being underdeveloped, I feel like there needs to be more like training on how not to abuse women. Or because it's like men are out here beating women up, killing women, and thinking it's fine. I think I saw on the news, there was like, I forgot where, I think it was in New York or Pennsylvania somewhere, a guy literally killed the woman because she didn't want to give him like her number. So she rejected him. And so it's kind of almost like, if you're being rejected, that's fine. It was in New York City. If you're being rejected, that's fine. But for you to get rejected and then kill someone over that, like that, to me, it's just like so extreme. It's like, what exactly is going on in your world? Like, what happened to you that would make you think that that was fine, that was okay to kill someone because they rejected your advance? So I feel like there's like something, I don't know, there's like a missing link or missing links there. Like, I can't exactly put like my finger on it. But I feel like maybe it's like because of like oppression or like racism, something. But this is like something's not like adding up where black men are committing these harms and like violence towards women, but technically no, for no reason, really. It's not justified.
But Daryl, okay, so I feel like we did this once before. My question for you is, if there was a specific training for black men to go to learn how to not harm women, do you think black men would take it?
Well, it might have to be court appointed, court ordered.
I've been acquitted of my training, Your Honor.
Okay. I'd be like, nigga, take me to jail. Shit. Like, I
right.
Take you to jail, just basically leave the city.
Three hots in a cot or a 3-hour lecture. All right.
Right.
Or just a drive to another state because they're not trying to deal with it.
Right. Can I trade this for community service? Because
I ain't doing that either. Community service, shit.
But I mean, if they had the option, it'd be anything but that.
Child. Do the trainers at the strip club. Shit.
Now, you may be onto something. You may be onto something there. And if we get a complimentary Hennessy, I'm telling you, we may be on to something. But no.
But they gotta give the strippers money now. You know, niggas is cheap. Come on now. See, but you have the strip club, then they come on.
you're asking for union labor laws, Daryl, to what Daryl, to what you were saying, I definitely agree that, yeah, I'm not pushing the narrative of men are, I don't know, I forgot what you said, but I would say that men are trash. You know, I'm the type of person, sadly, I usually don't say men are trash. Reason being is because, yeah, you know, we're all people, but what I like to use when it comes to masculinity and us as men, specifically Black men, we're operating on an old operating system. Like, it's like we're running off of iOS 2, but we're an iPhone 15, you know, like we dress nice, you know, like we go to work, we get money, you could do all that stuff. But if your operating system is an iOS 2 or iOS 3, you know, you're not going to have certain features going on and working for you. You still a phone. It's still a phone, nice phone, but, you know, it's almost like getting a prepaid version of an iPhone versus actually getting the iPhone. So I definitely agree. We're running off of an old operating system. Not we're trash. We just got to do better. We got to challenge ourselves more.
But it also seems like the upgrades are there. And we just like, ooh, you know what? I'm going to stay right here on two. I mean, I love that. I love that example, though. I love that example.
We hit ignore. Ignore.
Look, I just want to say, too, that in last month's episode, a similar thing happened where I was like, all right, thank y'all for like holding men accountable. We need to hear this. We need to sit down. We need to shut up. And they were like, no, no, no. It's all in love. And I know that. But if we want white people to do their work and talk about how trash other white people are, if we want the quote unquote good police to call out the bad ones and say that they're trash and put their bodies on the line and their lives on the line for the safety of our community, we as men have to just say men are trash. I'm not saying we all are. I know that we are some of the good ones and we're working and we're imperfect and we're going to continue to try to do our best to be our very best, right? But we got a whole different sorts of people likely listening to us, and they need to know that if they're operating in these practices where we're at iPhone 15 and they're choosing iOS 2 and they're hitting ignore, they're trash because it's a conscious decision to do so. And that conscious decision is consciously causing harm to women and other folks in our community. So we got to do better. We got to call it out like this. It is with love, but we got to call it out. We got to name it. We got to say what it is exactly so that we can get past it.
I agree. We have to name it. We got to call it what it is. So I think that the disrespect from Black women, I agree with everything that's been said, especially y'all know I'm a history buff. So all that historical tying in, I love it. Three things that I thought about while everybody was talking was it comes from a deficit perspective. It's reactionary. And it also includes harm, which read as violence and harm. Because if something's wrong or something's negative for some people, that automatically equals I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not doing something good enough. So the reaction part is, well, you just hurt my feelings and I can't articulate that. So I'm going to just hit you where it hurt too. And we both go be hurting, but I'm going to go lower. You go to hell. I'm going a notch below, which is not good because then it's a cycle. And I think that because some of us were not taught how to protect Black women properly and adequately, it's like, well, just do whatever. And a lot of that comes from home. And I'm not saying me. It's like, all right, I saw dad hit mom. So I'm going to hit my girlfriend because that's what I saw at home. And nobody said that was wrong or nobody reinforced it enough for me to be like, you know what? That's wrong. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to continue the cycle. It's a lot of us that had absent fathers. So there was no role model on how to properly respect and treat Black women. However, that is no excuse because, you know, we can think for ourselves. We know or should know what's right and what's wrong, what's, you know, what we should and should not be doing. And if it's harming somebody in any way, then we definitely should not be doing it. But, it, you know, another thing that came in my head was Black supremacy. But that's kind of like an oxymoron, right? Because, you know, the oppressor being the oppressed. But that's what it is for me. So it's a hierarchy. And at the top is Black men. Then at the bottom is everybody else. So you need to cater to, acquiesce, do what I say, because I need the power that was stripped from me, stripped from my people, stripped from my ancestors, and you're going to give it to me because you're the closest thing to me that looks like me, that is me. And if my community doesn't hold me up, then those other people aren't going to hold me up either. So you're going to hold me up however I think I need to be held up. So that means do what I say. You know, I'm a dominate. You're going to submit. You're going to submit willingly because I'm the Black man and you should do what the man says. Right. So it's layered. Right. It's layered. And in that is accountability, because I'm on the top of the food chain. I don't have to be accountable to anybody or anything. Y'all got to be accountable to me. So, you know, it's like, where do we stop it? Because it's hurting. And I hate to keep saying hurting, but it's hurting people. And it's making us look bad as a community. It's making us look bad as a people, to where when a Black woman is harmed, the first thing you want to do is attack her. Like, hey, you asked for this. Victim blaming, right? Well, you shouldn't have been in the car. You wouldn't have got shot. Wait a minute. Do I deserve to get shot just because I'm in the car? Do I deserve to get shot because we're having an argument? Or is it your deficit view that makes you react and have to a violent episode that you think I'm going to shut up or do what you say? So I don't like it. I really don't. And we need to fix it for real.
Is that your Yelp review?
0 out of 10. Do not recommend.
So, you know, we talked a lot about accountability. What do we do?
Assigned training is one
strip club.
That's, you'll get some. You'll get some. I feel as though we just need to, for me, we need to focus on the small moments, like focus on like the pennies in the bucket rather than trying to save up for $100 bill and be like, ah, we moving as men. So I feel like a lot of those penny moments goes back to what Sean was saying earlier in the conversation, when he was like, we need to be questioning like the other Black men in our lives, you know, whether it's the homie, whether it's the brother, whether it's the father, whether it's the little brother, you know, or someone that you're playing the big brother role, you know, like you could be someone's big brother and you don't even know it. You could be someone's uncle, like you could be someone's uncle and not even know it. So like kind of lean into that sometimes, you know, you don't have to lean into it all the time, because I understand how it is out here and just the dynamic. Like we said, it's difficult out here, but just because it's difficult don't mean that we don't try, you know? So in my head, I'm like, nothing beats a fail but a try. So let's start where you can by doing what you can where you can, but you got to do something, because if you choose to do nothing, then technically you're a part of the problem or you're just holding us back.
The central question, am I my brother's keeper? Yes. And it's got to be each one teach one, but we also have to look at ourselves first, because if we're not doing that, there's no way we're going to successfully be able to look at someone else and go, hey, but look at what you're doing. Look at this. This is causing harm. It's like, okay, but let me look at myself and what I'm doing first.
I agree. Accountability is introspective. But I think that people wait to be introspective to get to a growth point because they need something to look back at So now I have this checkpoint and I can look back and say, oh, I don't act like this anymore, instead of it being something in the moment. You know, under the guise of a work in progress. And it accountability definitely starts with self. But what I would add to that is the people in our lives enforcing and reinforcing their boundaries and not being afraid to say, hey, that was harmful. And I want you to know why it's harmful. And we need to have a conversation so that I know that you understand why that was harmful. Because, you know, hey, what you said hurt my feelings. All right, cool. I apologize. Let's go get something to eat. No, that's not going to help it, because I'm going to forget. And 2 weeks later, when the same thing happens, I'm going to react to say something else harmful. And now we're back to this. What you said is harmful, instead of it being, hey, I know I said X, Y, Z, and whether you tell me or not, I don't feel good about what I said to you. What can I do to fix this? The 5-step apology, believe it or not, has helped me with my accountability. So shout out to whoever made that. But that was something I was intentional about, because I was told that the way I apologized before was not good. And my apology was, I'm sorry you feel that way. Don't look at me like that, y'all. But that was my apology. And I just kind of left it at that. And somebody was like, no, that is not how you apologize. And I'm all like, well, why not? Because I acknowledged their feelings, didn't I? So that actually helped me learning how to apologize better and be sincere about apologizing, helped my accountability. And it helped me to understand harm from somebody else's perspective.
I just have to push back on one point. I don't know that we should require the folks around us. I do think it has to start with us first. If we're requiring the folks around us, if we're talking about Black women, right, we're talking about our communities, a kid may not know how to do that. Black women are tired of doing that. We really have to do the work ourselves first. And then I think we learn the next step, which is how to apologize, which, in my opinion, true apology comes with changed behavior. But you have to have some introspection in there as well. OK, go ahead.
Oh, let me just say, I definitely agree with you. And I'm not putting the labor on others, like saying you actually have to, you know, you have to tell me your boundaries. You have to tell me when I've hurt you. But I think a lot of it is that people don't express their boundaries just in general conversation.
In conclusion, I'll just say that I do think that podcasts and conversation like this is a really good help, is a really good like reflector for those who may not have done the reflection themselves by themselves, or listen to folks in their community who have said, hey, when you said this, I felt hurt, or when you did this, I felt scared. Right. Take a look at those things. Take a look at those moments, because if you are a human, then you know that all around you, you have to acquiesce to some degree to make sure that you're being appropriate. And sometimes we're not. But when we're not, we either have to call ourselves in or allow others to do so, not requiring them to do it, but making sure that the work is happening in some shape, form, or fashion.
So, I mean, at the end of it all, it's layered, right? Which somebody mentioned in the beginning, right? Like there's white supremacy, right? That's obviously ever present, right? And that we've been trying to shake for a long time, but for some reason can't. There is patriarchy and harmful masculinity that comes with it. There's a lack of empathy. There's power and privilege. There's safety. Right. There is conflict, and how sometimes a lot of us are not good with handling conflict. There's also trauma. Right. Both community, individual, intergenerational. Right. So all of these things play into why we do or do not choose to hold ourselves and each other accountable. Something that a woman, Mishara D. Winston, dope individual. Googled her if you did not know her. I had her on IG Live and she said, you know, as humans, we're all harmers. We're also all healers. We all have the capacity to heal, right? Through conversation, through kindness, through physical touch, through whatever. We also have the capacity to harm. And it's really about which one are we going to choose? Which one are we going to acknowledge? Which one are we going to actually intentionally do? And I think a lot of us are going to say we would choose to heal, but I think a lot of us sometimes unintentionally harm others, sometimes intentionally, but a lot of times unintentionally. And we really have to think about perception, right? One's perception is their reality. And I think that something about masculinity that I'll say harmful masculinity is that it's pretty narcissistic, right? And so our perception is our reality is like the reality, right? And so someone else's reality is like, nah, that's not true. That's not real. That's not reality. Well, if someone else has an opinion, then yeah, and that is their reality. And so now we have to kind of work together to figure out how we're going to move forward. But a lot of folks don't like that working together part. They're like, I'm right, and that is what the fuck it is. And so when we do that, that's harmful. Thinking that we're always right about everything, because that is not real life. It's just not. And so if you've made it this far and you're still listening, men, we do not hate men. We do not hate Black men. This is accountability. We're talking about ourselves and a lot of these examples, because we have caused harm, the six of us on this podcast, and we've had to do some damn hard work to try and be better. Because if we do nothing, then the same bullshit continues to happen. The same harm continues to happen. We are harming Black women. We are harming Black children. We're harming non-binary folks, but we're also harming ourselves. We are harming ourselves. So do something. Be introspective. Challenge yourself. Challenge your own thinking. Because nothing will change if we do nothing. We stay right the fuck where we are. Yeah, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank y'all. Any announcements? And anyone, if you want to share your socials and tell folks where to find you.
Oh, wait, I got an announcement. I'm not sure when this episode is going to drop, but May 23rd, I'm throwing a sneaker ball in DC.
Yeah.
So it's going to be for Black Gay Pride. It's the Gay Professional Men of Color. So gpmc.dc on Instagram. Look at, find it up there, or you can find me at Mr. Hamilton 521 on Instagram.
You can follow me at mtolliver_lcsw. You can follow us at dearblackman_yougood on Instagram as well. I also run a Pay What You Can monthly groups. And so if you are a Black man, if you identify as a Black man and you love this conversation, you want to be a part of a conversation like this one, send us a DM at dearblackmanyougood or email me at marvintolliver@gmail.com. All right. Thanks, y'all, for listening. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And let's be safe out here.
All right, y'all. Catch y'all next time.
Take care.
Peace, love, and hair grease.
Thanks for listening to the episode of Dear Black Man, You Good? If you have any suggestions for future topics or questions you want answered on the show, email us at dearblackmanpodcast@gmail.com. That's dearblkmanpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast by hitting that notification button and follow us on Instagram at dearblackman_yougood. Black men, remember, we see you, we hear you, we love you, we are you. We out.